Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll free, 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
We did it again. Another great big giant Friday show for you. Thanks so much for being with us. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and I'm not kidding about it being a great big Friday show. Second hour, we bring you the second edition of the as yet unnamed Catholic Answers game show. We may not have the budget to pay for a name for the show, but we've put everything we've got into it, and you're going to love it. Hang around for the second hour. This hour, we talk movies, what's happening on the screens around the country this summer with Deacon Stephen Gradonis. Deacon Gradonis is a deacon now for 2 years. Is that right, Deacon Gradonis?
Just earlier this month, we celebrated our two-year anniversary, the class of 2016 in the Archdiocese of Newark.
How beautiful. How beautiful. And it continues to be a joy to you to minister as a deacon?
Oh, absolutely. You know, there are many things in my life that I question, but never this. I became a deacon to serve the Church of God, to serve Jesus Christ, to answer a call, and to save my own soul. And that remains an absolute certainty in my life.
Well, congratulations on your two-year anniversary. And I should let people know, you, in addition to being a deacon, you're the founder of decentfilms.com, a film critic for the film critic, really, for the National Catholic Register, a member of the New York Film Critics Circle, and a permanent deacon, as you said, in the Archdiocese of Newark. You also host with David DeSerto the Gabriel Award-winning cable TV show Real Faith for New Evangelization Television. I got that all right?
Yes.
And how do you maintain, I've always wondered about this, your membership in the film critic circle, because that's a very prestigious group. Do you have to just continue writing great reviews, or what do you got to do?
Well, I'll be finished. This is my first year as a member of the New York Film Critic Circle. So they haven't yet threatened to kick me out, but I did need to be sponsored for membership, and the members all had to vote. It is a great honor, and I'm very happy to be a part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm guessing if you just stop writing reviews, they're going to kick you out. So you better keep going with that.
I can promise to do that.
I know that you're on vacation. I'm grateful that you joined us from your vacation palace. I don't even know where that is, but I do know you're near sand because I saw on it was Facebook where I saw it. I think you can also see it on Twitter, a sculpture that you made. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah. So I've been doing sand sculpture all my life, ever since I was a kid. And when I went to art school in the late 80s, I studied comic book art and human figure. And crucifixions have been a favorite study of mine for a long time. And I've been doing sand crucifixions now for a number of years. Sculpting our Lord in sand is something that is, it's both an act of devotion and an act of artistic satisfaction for me. And I love to do it because I love to engage the people that, you know, that stop by to comment on it.
Right.
And it's very rewarding.
And so, like, will people just join you and watch while you sculpt and talk to you while you're doing your work?
Yeah, it usually takes until you're about two-thirds of the way through and it really starts to look like something. And then people start to stop and talk and ask questions. And, you know, most often people will just, you know, express appreciation or something. They'll say, oh, that's really good. But then you have the people who really want to ask, you know, so why do you sculpt Jesus? And then that, of course, gives me an opportunity to share my faith with them.
Mm-hmm. And is there some special skill to sculpting in sand like that? I mean, can you just use the beach sand? You got to bring your own sand? Do you need to wet it a certain way? What's the deal there with the sand?
That's a really good question. There are actually three – I'm not going to go into this in detail, but there are three different ways of doing sand sculpture. And when I do figures like Jesus, I use the simplest and most intuitive method, which is just hand packing wet sand. I just start when the tide goes out. I just begin sculpting it and molding it into shape. And I just keep working on whatever doesn't look right until it stops not looking right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. It's extraordinary. Now people can see your sculpture, because I think people will be amazed. Actually, I mean, even discussing it, you don't get a sense of really the beauty of it. Where can people see it?
I posted my photos of my sculpture of Jesus on the cross, both on my Twitter and Facebook pages. So if you go to Twitter/ Decent Films, or you can also look for my name, Stephen Gridanis, on Facebook, and it's in both places.
Well, we're here to discuss film today. If you'd like to discuss the movies of the summer, or you have a more general film question, give us a call, 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. If you prefer the spelled version, Stephen Gridanis is our guest. He is both a deacon and a film critic. And summer is... how does summer stack up with the rest of the year? Kind of a slow movie time, really. People are out doing other things. Is that correct, or have I missed something?
So, well, you know, it used to be a fairly clear pattern in Hollywood movie land when it came to the release patterns. The early part of the year, January, February, March, was very slow. Hollywood dumped all of their bad movies at that time. And then when we got to Labor Day, things really started to pick up, and the summer movie season would get underway, the big blockbusters and so forth. And then the prestige movies, the movies that they hope win Oscars, of course, come later in the year. But what Hollywood has been doing more and more is chasing that blockbuster dollar. They've become more and more focused on it. Everything is about that. And so the summer movie season has been slowly, relentlessly pushed back into April, into March, even into February. Black Panther is a quintessential summer movie, but it opens in February, so all bets are off now.
I see. And Black Panther did summer blockbuster kind of money, didn't it? It was very successful.
The last time I checked, it was still the number one film of 2018, I believe. It's probably going to be surpassed by Avengers Civil War, but that hadn't happened the last time I checked, I think.
I finally saw Avengers Civil War, and we talked about it last time. And I will just say this. I didn't find the ending totally satisfying.
Well, it wasn't meant to satisfy you. See, this is the thing.
Okay.
It was meant to blow you away and to make you feel like your mind was blown. And most of all, it was meant to make you want to see the next Avengers movie coming out in 2019. This is more and more what Hollywood blockbusters are doing. They're not trying to satisfy you. They want you to leave the theater not necessarily feeling satisfied, but anticipating the next movie.
Yeah. Well, I would have said this is one of my favorite superhero movies of all time if I knew there was no sequel. If they just ended it that way, I'd have said that that is a brilliant ending. But you look at it and you go, okay, it's like this is intermission now. I'm going to take a 1 year intermission, and the story has to start up again.
That's right. And then it remains to be seen whether the next movie is going to give us anything like a conclusion. This is where I feel that the movies really ought to be different from television. In television, you invest 30 to 60 minutes once a week in your favorite TV show, and they can afford to string it along. You have big noisy episodes. You have little quiet episodes. In the movies, everything has to be a major event because you're spending $12 and 2.5 hours of your life. They should give you a beginning, a middle, and an end, but that's not what's happening.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about this summer's the summer movies. You said that Black Panther, to the best of your knowledge, was still the number one movie of 2018. I wonder if Jurassic World didn't. It follows on a very successful movie, right? The new Jurassic. It's the sequel to an extraordinarily successful movie. So, might it topple Black Panther?
Probably not, but it's going to finish in the top 10 for 2018 for sure. Jurassic World was a huge movie. Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom, as it's called, the continuation of the story, it turns out to be the middle movie in a projected Jurassic World trilogy. And like I said, the ending of this film is all about setting up the next one. So go into it forewarned with that knowledge. Chris Pratt is back. And he brings a lot of star power to this franchise. We've also got Bryce Dallas Howard. Both of their characters have been significantly rejiggered since the first film in response to criticism of the characters. But this is ultimately it's a movie about the dinosaurs of the Jurassic World theme park, about the division between the heroes who want to try to save them from extinction, the villains who want to exploit them, and what happens in that space between the two.
Well, always, I imagine Jeff Goldblum is probably in it, and it always seems to me like he's the pivot of the whole Jurassic Park thing, and now Jurassic World, because he's the one who is trying to be, to say, he's like the Cassandra, I guess. Would that be fair to say? He's like the Cassandra of these movies, that his warnings are never heeded, but they always come true.
Sure. And he's actually only in this film for about a minute or two, very, very briefly giving testimony to Congress or something. And in the first film, he was the voice of the overarching moral theme of the franchise, which is about the dangers of technology in comparison to our responsible use of technology. He's the one who says, you were so busy thinking about whether you could that you didn't stop to think about whether you should. And that's a very potent message. It's one of the most quotable lines from the first film. That message gets a little lost in these new Jurassic World movies for a number of reasons. One of them is that the franchise is starting to become more cynical about humanity and about whether, you know, in the first film, the idea that there are people who are dying, people who are out there among the dinosaurs. Dinosaurs are great. We love to ooh and ah, but human lives are what matter. But as the series goes on, it falls more and more in love with the dinosaurs, and the humans become more and more expendable.
Oh, is that weird? Do you think that that is just exhaustion of the makers of the franchises, or these extended, you know, trilogies and whatnot of dinosaurs? Or do you think that that's actually our culture is on that kind of arc vis-a-vis human beings?
It's a really interesting question, and I think it's a little bit of both. I think that anytime you have a franchise, a monster movie franchise that goes on and on, the monsters increasingly take over the franchise. They become the subjects rather than just the kind of instigating force.
Right.
But at the same time, from the Planet of the Earth, Planet of the Apes series to Avengers, the Avengers movie, as we were just talking about, to a lot of other movies in recent years, the idea of apocalypse, the idea of the end of mankind, is clearly on Hollywood's mind. And the question is, are these movies cautionary tales? Are they warning us about the danger that could befall us? Which I think is what's happening in the Planet of the Apes franchise, at least certainly in the middle movie, mm-hmm. The Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Or is there a real streak of nihilism and something that I have called post-human porn? That was something that I worried about in the first Planet of the Apes movie, the idea that, you know, mankind is on the way out, and maybe that's a good thing.
Wow. See, that, a phrase like that, that's why you're in the New York Film Critics Circle, that kind of stuff. That is right. Post-human porn, because they even used to make this TV show called After Humans, and it would tell all the cool stuff that would happen once people were gone. That is a great little line.
I actually cited that TV show in my review of Rise of the Planet of the Apes as a point of contrast. And I'm not necessarily saying that After People is post-human porn or that Planet of the Apes is post-human porn, but I think it's something that we need to be concerned about, and it's something that we need to watch out for, because I think that that potential is definitely out there in the culture.
Stephen Greidanis is our guest. As you heard, he is a member of the New York Film Critics Circle. He is the film reviewer for the National Catholic Register, which you should be reading. It's a fine, fine publication. And he is a deacon. But most importantly, he is our guest. We're talking movies, summer's movies. I'm going to ask him about The Incredibles. I want to ask him about Mr. Rogers, maybe about Han Solo. We'll get to all that right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catch Catholic Answers Live anytime at Catholic.com.
Pope Francis said, "All of us are called to mature in our work as evangelizers. We want to have better training, a deepening love, and a clearer witness to the gospel. St. Paul Street Evangelization's online school of evangelization will equip you with the tools you need to be an effective evangelist. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you're unable to give, we'll set you up for free. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
This is Tim Staples, and I'm really excited to tell you about a special limited-time offer we've got right now on subscriptions to our award-winning Catholic Answers magazine. Sign up today during our annual subscription drive, and not only can you save big bucks off the normal price, we'll give you a digital subscription to the magazine for free. Subscribe today by calling 818-487-2011 or logging online to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com. Sign up for a one-year subscription and we'll give you $10 off the normal price. Better yet, become a two-year subscriber and we'll up the ante by dropping the price $20. That's a saving of $10 to $20 plus a free digital subscription when you sign up for a subscription to Catholic Answers Magazine. Act now. This is our best offer of the year, and it's only available for a limited time. Subscribe to Catholic Answers Magazine before our annual subscription drive ends. Phone 818-487-2011 or go to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com today.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Call now with your question. 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Great big Friday show. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Don't forget, next hour, the unnamed game show. We play that with our top secret celebrity guest, who I do not want to let you know who that is. But I will just let you know Jimmy Akin's in the building. 888-31-TRUTH is our number here. We're talking movies with film critic and deacon Stephen Greidanis. 888-318-7884 is the number. Deacon Greidanis, we have calls coming in already. Shall we take one?
Yeah, sure.
Nathan in West Virginia, listening on 90.7 FM. You are on with Deacon Stephen Greidanis. Your question, please.
Hi, sir. So I am a relatively recent Catholic convert. I used to be an atheist, and when I was an atheist, I enjoyed watching certain films, especially my favorite was David Lynch, Inland Empire, if you've ever seen that one. And it's very, in my opinion, very artistic, very profound. Also has so much nudity and sexuality, and I don't know what quite to do about that anymore. I mean, is this type of film that's artistic but also has so much nudity, is this simply unsuitable for Christian viewing? Should we shun it entirely? Should I fast forward and skip over through the scenes with nude people in them? What do you think, sir?
First of all, welcome home and congratulations. It's great to have you as part of God's family. I have not seen the specific film that you talk about, and honestly, I haven't seen a lot of David Lynch films. I have seen a few. And so one of the main issues that I deal with in my work is this issue of the portrayal of all kinds of potentially morally problematic content, including nudity and sexuality, violence, and so on. And all of these issues raise important moral questions, and they can certainly be morally objectionable. They can make a film morally offensive. They can be degrading to humanity, to the humanity of the actors, to the humanity of the viewer. There are no absolute hard and fast rules, except when it comes to things like pornography. I mean, obviously, pornography, where the intent is to elicit an immoral response from the viewer, and it's intended for that. That's obviously totally wrong. Pope John Paul II has written about the use of nudity in art in his Theology of the Body talks. And what he talks about as far as the moral problem of it is the human body, the nude human body has what he calls a nuptial dimension. In other words, it is a gift that is meant to be received by one, the husband to his wife, the wife to her husband. But then you take that nude body and you make a painting of it, or a sculpture, or a photograph, or a film. And suddenly what ought to have a nuptial meaning for one becomes an object intended for the consumption of many. And so Pope John Paul talks about how this is a moral problem. But he also says that it is a moral problem that art can potentially overcome through a process of sublimation, whereby the body becomes a symbol or a representation of something larger than just one person. This can certainly happen in sculpture and painting. It can even happen in photography and film. There are still questions around the possibility of arousing an illicit response to art, of becoming an occasion of sin. But that's not always the case. Some obvious examples would include when you see nudity in a disturbing context, like concentration camp nudity in Schindler's List, or perhaps what's been called ethnographic nudity in a film like The Mission, where you see, you know, Native Americans, in this case, Guarani Indians from South America, walking around in various states of undress. And depending on the sensibilities of the viewer, these things need not be occasions of sin. So cross-examining a work of art and saying, are the actors being exploited? Is this degrading? Are they doing things that people should not be asked to do? Is this an occasion of sin for me? These are the kinds of questions that we have to ask. There aren't hard and fast answers, but there are. These are some of the principles that you begin to use to unpack these questions. I've written about this quite a bit at my website. You can start with my article, What Are the Decent Films?, at my website, decentfilms.com. I hope that helps for a beginning.
Okay, thank you so much. Yes, I think something I wonder is, I get the impression that a lot of today's R-rated films, I mean, they may not be pornography as a whole, but that they definitely throw scenes in there that really are just for the purpose of producing a physical response in the audience, to be quite candid.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And frankly, you don't need nudity to do that. I mean, you can do that with a fully clothed model in a potato chip commercial, try to elicit a prurient reaction from the viewer. But it's absolutely, and it's not only on the big screen, they do this on the small screen too. They throw in the titillation. I've heard from many Christian fans of TV shows like Game of Thrones, and some of them are passionate fans of the show in spite of the heavy use of nudity and sexuality and rape and so forth. And other people say, you know, this is pornography. I haven't seen Game of Thrones, and I can't speak to that specifically, but certainly this is an issue that confronts us everywhere we turn in popular culture. And I will say that as Christians, we have to be willing to make decisions about popular culture that are very different from the decisions that our non-Christian neighbors make, because we live in a post-Christian society. We live in a society where, as Pope Paul VI said, the drama of the separation of the gospel and the culture is the central story of our times. So what other people consider as acceptable, we have to be willing to cross-examine from the perspective of the gospel. It doesn't mean that we have to be Puritans and to reject, you know, any movie that has any kind of nudity in it. But if the intent is to be prurient and to elicit, to appeal to those base instincts, then obviously that's something that we have to reject.
Nathan, thank you so much for your call. And again, welcome. So happy that you have come home. How much of your job do you feel, Deacon Gridanus, is, you know, everybody knows that Jurassic World is coming out. If you have any contact with media of any kind in the world, you know. But there are many very fine movies that I think people don't know about at all. How much of your job do you think is to give those movies a chance, you know, lead people to them?
Not as big a part as I'd like. Unfortunately, I spend more of my time than I'd like commenting on the big blockbuster movies, because that's what people want to see and that's what gets the clicks. But when I can introduce someone to a film like Won't You Be My Neighbor, the documentary about Fred Rogers, or a movie like The Rider, a beautiful film about a young Lakota Sioux rodeo star, very almost, it has a documentary like feel, and it's based on the life of the actor who plays the lead part, and he's a Christian. And that film is also there are spiritual themes to both of these films, The Rider and Won't You Be My Neighbor. When I can introduce people to movies like this, that's the best part of the job.
But where can you see documentaries? Like I don't. Do you have to live in a big city? Where do they show them? Because I don't see these making their way into theaters.
It does help to live near a major market like New York. This is one of the reasons why, you know, my mother lives in Florida and she's always hoping that I'm going to move down there. And I always have to say, I have to stay near New York so I can see all the little movies, not just the big movies.
Right. Right.
Even if you don't live somewhere where there's an art house film where these little movies come eventually, you just have to watch for them on Amazon and Netflix.
A whole bunch more movies to get to with Deacon Stephen Gradonis, film critic extraordinaire for the National Catholic Register. 888-318-7884 is our number if you'd like to talk with Deacon Gradonis. I've mentioned the titles of several movies that we haven't gotten to yet. We will get to those. I also want to talk to you about those two movies you just mentioned. Smaller movies, but movies we should know about. More of that after this on Catholic Answers Live.
There's only one. Catholic Answers Live.
Now there's a fast and easy way to get in touch with EWTN, the EWTN Everything number. Call 1-800-447-EWTN to get the latest information on programming, special events, pilgrimages, and more. Our EWTN Family Viewer Services representatives are ready to help you with whatever your needs may be. The EWTN Everything number, 1-800-447-EWTN. EWTN.
What difference does it make who or what you worship or what you believe? Sharing the faith used to make some people mad because it challenged their own strong beliefs. Today, it makes a lot of people yawn because they don't have strong beliefs about anything. Religious indifference is the great spiritual sickness of our age, a product of the relativism that dominates modern culture. This is Matt Nelson, and in my new book, Just Whatever, I'll take down the building blocks of religious indifference one by one. We'll look at the different kinds of indifference you tend to encounter in your friends and family members to see where they come from and why they're seductive. What you believe matters. Find out why and what to do about it in my new book, Just Whatever. You can order your copy of Just Whatever by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know that Catholic Answers Live is on TV? What began as a monthly series on EWTN in April of 2017 is now going to be coming to you on a weekly basis. You can catch Catholic Answers Live TV Saturdays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on EWTN, with an encore at 2:30 a.m. on Sundays. We'll also be available soon on Apple TV, Roku, and the Augustine Institute's multimedia platform, Form. Make a point of making Catholic Answers Live TV part of your weekly view, and we'll see you on the airwaves. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Great big Friday show. It's summertime. At least that's what they told me yesterday, that summer started. The first thing that I thought was, oh no, that means that summer's almost over. I don't know why I have that reaction. Like, I love summer so much that as soon as it starts, my first thought is, oh my gosh, the hours are ticking away. Summer's almost over. But summer is big, giant movie time, and Deacon Stephen Gradonis occupies himself a good part of his life watching films, writing about films, thinking about films, and today talking about films with us. Deacon Gradonis, a caller wanted to know, who I didn't want to talk, but just wanted to know about are there Christian film critics associations, and are you part of those?
There have been a number of organizations around a group of Christian cinephiles that I've been a part of for a long time. There's a message board called Arts and Faith, artsandfaith.com, that I've been a part of for a while. And we were known for a while, some of us, as the Promontory Film Critics Circle. What I do now is I vote every year in the Arts and Faith Ecumenical Jury Awards. So every year we vote on the films that we consider to have the most spiritual significance. Everyone's allowed to interpret that in their own way, and those lists always bring a lot of a lot of interesting films to the fore.
And that's still continuing? You still do that?
Yeah, yeah. So in 2017, for instance, some of the films that we that made our top 10 list included my personal top film of the year, Graduation, which is a Romanian film.
Okay.
Darren Aronofsky's Mother, The Unknown Girl by the Dardenne brothers. Those were among the films of the Arts and Faith Ecumenical Jury of 2017. And if you're interested in discussion of that kind, check out artsandfaith.com.
Artsandfaith.com. Very good. I'm glad that caller called to ask that. If you'd like to speak with Deacon Gradonis about film in general or about a particular film this either coming out this summer or maybe has come out recently, 888-318-7884 is the number. Deacon Michael in Tulsa, Oklahoma, listening on St. Michael Catholic Radio, is on the line. Deacon Michael, your question for Deacon Stephen.
Hi, Deacon Stephen. I teach Catholic high school in Tulsa, and every year I teach a short one-month course on Star Wars. We talk about Joseph Campbell and the monomyth. We talk about the spirituality of Star Wars. And I've done this for about 6 years now, and I'll be honest, I'm getting kind of, A, sick of it, and B, having a harder and harder time fitting the whole franchise into this kind of discussion because it feels like it's going off the rails. I just wondered if you had any overall thoughts on that and maybe Solo in particular.
So I have certainly been concerned about the fate of, I mean, Star Wars has been a very important story for many of us for a long time. When it burst onto the scene in 1977, it changed the way people think. It changed the face of popular culture. It offered us this powerful metaphor, the Force, for exploring ideas of mystery and spirituality. The Jedi brought a religious dimension to a genre, science fiction, where it had often not been present. George Lucas obviously drew on some Eastern themes and elements on samurai cinema and wuxia fiction, but also on Western traditions, on The Lord of the Rings and on King Arthur and so forth. And he formed a myth that was really something unique, uniquely American, but also drawing on all these other themes. What is happening now under the kind of sponsorship, the corporate sponsorship of Disney, is that the Star Wars brand is moving away from what I would call its mythic roots and is becoming more and more a franchise where any number of stories can be told about any number of characters with all kinds of arcs. We can, instead of having, you know, the hero rebels and the evil empire, which is a kind of a mythic Tolkien-esque thing, instead you can tell morally complex tales like Rogue One, where the rebels engage in what look to me an awful lot like acts of urban terrorism. You can explore more complicated characters on both sides of the divide. It's not just white hats and black hats, which is what I think Star Wars in its essence should be. I think you also run into trouble when you move away from the creative inspiration of an individual like George Lucas, and, you know, whatever else, whatever problems you can say about him and however he sabotaged his own work, you know, without someone like George Lucas at the helm, that those great moments in, say, The Empire Strikes Back, where Darth Vader tells Luke, "I am your father," that's not something that a Disney corporate board would have okayed. Or the redemption of Darth Vader. It's just this tremendously bold stroke in Return of the Jedi. It's akin to taking a figure like the Wicked Witch of the West or Hannibal Lecter and turning them into a good guy. It's unthinkably bold. I'm not saying that Star Wars is perfect or that everything about it is wonderful or that it's not also very silly and, you know, very cardboard characters and bad dialogue. All of that is true. But these powerful elements are there. And what's happening is that Star Wars is becoming slicker. It's, you know, the dialogue is better and they make fewer of the mistakes that George Lucas made. But those moments of inspiration are being kind of smoothed out and we're being sold something that doesn't satisfy on that mythic level. That's how I see it.
Deacon?
Well, thank you. You really articulated a lot of my gut feelings about the whole thing.
Yeah, there's a way, and our art is really not a job for a committee, maybe, or for a maybe even if a committee could make it, it's not a job for a corporate board.
I think that's really true. It's very seldom that you have a committee that comes together and makes a successful film. I think Casablanca is one of the few examples of a movie that you could say was successfully made by a committee. I mean, you take a film like Solo, it's a film that has a certain mission that it wants to accomplish. It wants to explain how you do the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs. It wants to tell us how Han Solo met Chewbacca. But in the process, one of the things that Star Wars has always done is it's given us images of wonder and beauty. We've always, from the very beginning, we looked at Star Wars and we saw things no one had ever seen before. And that power of beauty in art is one of the most powerful things that cinema can do. There are no memorable images in Solo. There's not one single thing like in the original Star Wars, that moment where you see the TIE fighter going, the Star Destroyer going overhead, and it just keeps going and going and going.
Right.
Or the images of that when we first see the planet of Naboo in Episode One. You know, it's just beautiful, the capital city. Lucas came up with these really striking images, and beauty is one of the three transcendentals: goodness, truth, and beauty. Star Wars gave us images of beauty. I don't see that happening in Solo.
Deacon Michael, thanks so much for the chance to talk about Star Wars a little bit.
Thank you very much.
All right. 888-318-7884, our number. We're talking movies with Deacon Stephen Gradonis, film critic, and as I said, Deacon. And I'm going to ask you about one that I actually got to go on a date with my wife to see, Ocean's 8.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I like the excitement in your voice when I say that, because I had generally positive feelings about it. But tell me, am I wrong?
Well, you know, nobody can tell you that you're wrong. If you got something good out of a movie, I would never tell anyone, oh, you shouldn't have enjoyed that movie, unless I think that the movie was flatly immoral. As it happens, I also saw Ocean's 8 with my wife on a date, and we had a good time. It's a movie that is all about style and attitude and watching movie stars have a good time making a movie. You know,
it's
in a way, it's a little bit like the Mission Impossible movies. The plot doesn't really matter. What matters is that the actors are having a good time and we're having a good time watching them. It's a heist movie, obviously, and so it falls in a genre of a long list of movies. There's a famous example of a heist movie that is on the 1995 Vatican film list, The Lavender Hill Mob, starring Alec Guinness.
Oh.
It's about a gold robbery. And in this movie, there's a very clever plot involving the Met Gala, which we heard so much about this past year.
Right.
With the Vatican, sacred artifacts and so forth.
Tell you, part of what I really enjoyed about Ocean's 8 is, and maybe, I don't know if you did, but it's basically a male movie that's been made three times before.
Yes. And 11, 12, and 13.
Right.
And then also before that, there was the Frank Sinatra version.
Which was, okay, I'll just lay my cards on the table. The Frank Sinatra version was a terrible movie. And I thought that the Ocean's 11 that followed it was a mediocre movie followed by two terrible movies. And I do not like these movies very much. But I liked the fact that the women were playing the parts that had previously been played by men, basically, is what was happening. And especially the two stars, Sandra Bullock, who's wonderful, and Kate Blanchett, they literally have the same hair color as the two guys in the original, you know, George Clooney and Brad Pitt. They're playing George Clooney and Brad Pitt, and I thought it was great. It was just fun.
There's clearly been an underemphasis in Hollywood movies on making movies about women, and that's because most producers are men, most screenwriters are men, most directors are men, and men think like men and they tell stories about men. It's just what people do. I love the story about the little rich girl Hollywood producer who was told to write a story about poverty, and her story went like this. Once there was a young girl who was very poor. Her father and mother were poor. The gardener was poor. The chauffeur was poor. The butler was poor. The nanny was poor. They were all very, very poor. And it's the same thing with men. We think like men, right. And we tell stories about men.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of people were very upset with the all-female gender-flipped Ghostbusters remake. And that's, you know, Ghostbusters is yeah. Like Star Wars. For many people, it's a sacred text from their youth. One of the things I think works about Ocean's 8 is none of these movies have ever been anyone's idea of a masterpiece. Nobody's right. childhood is going to be ruined if Ocean's 8 doesn't live up to somebody's idea of what it should be.
Right.
It just has to be fun, and it is.
And it's fun, and it's also, you know, people might roll their eyes a little bit with, oh, we have to do everything a gender opposite way, but they know that they're doing it, and they're having fun with it. And that's I liked it. So I'm glad I'm not wrong in liking it. Let me ask you about those two. You named two smaller films, and I want to just ask you about those. We got to take a quick break, but one of them is on Mr. Rogers, right? The
Won't You Be My Neighbor?
Won't You Be My Neighbor.
This is a documentary. It's a celebration of the 50th anniversary of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, which was started in 1968. It's by Morgan Neville, the documentarian who also made 20 Feet from Stardom.
Okay, and then the other is the one that you talked about. It's called The Rider. It's about a Christian Native American cowboy. I want to hear about these two films, especially Mr. Rogers, because I grew up with Mr. Rogers, as maybe you did as well. I don't know. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more discussion of film with Deacon Stephen Greydonis right after this.
Every question is important. Ask yours today on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers is doing it again. We're holding our fifth annual Apologetics Conference this September in beautiful San Diego, California, and we'd like to see you there.
We've had a wonderful time going home all enthused.
Every time we come here, it's just an incredible experience.
Normally, you'd have to root through a dozen different books to get half the stuff I've learned here.
These guys are so amazing. I always get so much, learn so much. I've already signed up for next year.
Join us this September 27th to the 30th for a lively and inspiring conference with an all-star lineup of speakers guaranteed to jumpstart your faith. All of your favorite Catholic Answers apologists and special keynote speaker, Raymond Leo Cardinal Burke.
I enjoy the atmosphere and the friendliness of the people, and I'm having a great time.
I love it. I love it. I'm so glad I came here.
I've just learned so much. You know, I've been a Catholic all my life. It's just been so wonderful.
I love it. I want to come back every year.
What difference does it make who or what you worship or what you believe? Sharing the faith used to make some people mad because it challenged their own strong beliefs. Today, it makes a lot of people yawn because they don't have strong beliefs about anything. Religious indifference is the great spiritual sickness of our age, a product of the relativism that dominates modern culture. This is Matt Nelson, and in my new book, Just Whatever, I'll take down the building blocks of religious indifference one by one. We'll look at the different kinds of indifference you tend to encounter in your friends and family members to see where they come from and why they're seductive. What you believe matters. Find out why and what to do about it in my new book, Just Whatever. You can order your copy of Just Whatever by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Just 15 minutes away now from the great big giant Friday unnamed game show with our super secret celebrity guest. I do not want to let the cat out of the bag on that one. That is something that I just want to keep close to the vest. You'll have to tune in next hour to find out who our super secret celebrity guest is, and about his various books, including A Daily Defense and The Fathers Know Best. I want to remind you right now that we have a huge, giant sale going on at shop.catholic.com. Things priced $10, $5, as low as $1, like good stuff, too, from some of the best apologists out there. I know, as a matter of fact, I even saw today that Tim Staples' book, Behold Your Mother, which is a great book, was $10 on there. So if I couldn't just go steal it from Tim's office whenever I want to, I'd have bought it. You go to Catholic, shop.catholic.com. All these things on sale, $5, $10, $1. It just goes through June. And when you make your order, all shipping, as it doesn't matter how many things you buy, it's like a flat rate shipping. It all gets to you for $5 anywhere in the continental United States. I don't know how much it costs outside of there. I know I made a promise on the show yesterday that I would send a book to a woman in Nigeria, and I just saw the bill for that, and I'm guessing they're not going to let me do that anymore. So, but in the continental United States, you get free shipping. Just go to shop.catholic.com. Deacon Stephen Greidanis is our guest this hour. We are talking about films. I want to know about the Mr. Rogers film. He was such a huge part of the American childhood.
Yes, he was. He was absolutely a defining figure. And for a few years in the early lives of many people of my generation and of subsequent generations, he showed us the way. He told us what life was all about. And he was very gentle, but he didn't shy away from some of the more difficult aspects of life. He helped us to understand our feelings. And, you know, if we all remembered those lessons, and if we all lived by them, I think we all know that the world would be a much better place. Unfortunately, he was a kind of a voice in the wilderness on all of this stuff.
Yeah.
And we, as a result, we live in a world that's very different from Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. But we all still know deep down that Mr. Rogers was right. And that's why he's become such a powerful figure. He was an unlikely TV star. Now he's an unlikely internet celebrity and icon. Every time
really?
Something bad happens, everybody breaks out the Mr. Rogers quotes. And I think that really speaks to our understanding that there's something lacking in our culture, something that we've lost.
Well, and the thing that he did was he spoke beautifully to very small children. Like, I think part of why he can be so easily parodied is he's speaking to very small children in a way that's really appropriate to very small children. It's very safe to them, very inviting to them. And it's not like just hitting the comedic beat every, 8 seconds with crazy sounds and that kind of thing. I wonder if you share that sense with me.
So, yes, one of the things that the documentary Won't You Be My Neighbor brings out is that Mr. Rogers saw, on the one hand, great potential in television. He believed that television had the power to unite the nation as one neighborhood. But on the other hand, he was appalled by the tone and the abrasiveness of so much of what he saw, even in those early days of television, pies in the face and insults and that kind of rapid fire. He felt that that was difficult for children. He wanted to slow things down. He wanted to create a very gentle, non-threatening space for children. And that was what he thought was needed, but it's also who he was. It came right from his personality. One of the things that comes across in this documentary is, people see Mr. Rogers on television and they wonder, was he like that in real life? And he absolutely was.
That's wild to think about it. And he was, you said his Christian faith was a big part of what drove him.
He was an ordained Presbyterian pastor, and he was studying at seminary in Pittsburgh at the same time that he was learning about child psychology and also learning about television. And he went back and forth as to what he wanted to do, and he was ultimately ordained. But his calling, he felt, was to work in television. And while his show wasn't preachy, one of his friends in the documentary says, he wore a sweater instead of a collar, but he preached.
Boy, did he.
He wasn't. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he did. We have several callers for you, and I do monopolize sometimes, and I want to make sure I get to these callers. Let's go to Henry in Nebraska. Henry, thanks so much for your call. Your question for Deacon Stephen Greidanis.
So my question, I have two questions, but first one is, Marvel has a lot of big superhero movies, but which ones would you recommend?
Very, very quickly, the Marvel movies that I enjoy the most and that I've rewatched the most include the original Iron Man from 2008, because I think it's got the best redemption story. I think it's got the most moral center of any of the Marvel movies, with the possible exception of Black Panther. That would be another one I would recommend. The original Captain America is also, I think, very good. I like the first Avengers movie because of the way that it pits the characters of Captain America and Iron Man against one another, kind of challenges Tony's selfishness and challenges him to arise to a higher level of moral self-sacrifice than he would have been capable of without that kind of goading from Iron Man. And also Joss Whedon does a really great job of writing these characters and bringing them together. I'm also a fan of the first Guardians of the Galaxy. Very funny, very witty, with a lot of sarcasm and humor, but also with a real moral foundation to it. It's afraid to let that morality come wholly to the front without undercutting it with the comedy, but it does come through, especially in the end, when a character tells the heroes about his family that is now safe because of their heroics. Those are the ones that stand out to me the most.
Okay.
You had another question, Henry?
So the sequels...
Oh, go ahead.
And so the sequels don't tend to be as good.
For the most part, that's probably the case. I mean, I enjoy the airport fight scene in Captain America Civil War as much as anyone. But I think it's... The movies become, after a while, they become all middle movie. They don't have that beginning, middle, and end structure that they tend to have in the beginning. And then the second Guardians of the Galaxy film, I think, gets bogged down with some nasty elements, some misogyny, and some excessive violence that I think is really morally problematic.
Yeah, okay. And then my second question is, what do you think about the hero versus hero movies like Batman versus Superman and like Captain America Civil War?
I think that it's certainly part of the comic book mythology. We've always pitted our heroes against each other, and I think it can be interesting. I think it can be revealing, or sometimes it's just a question of who's more powerful and who would win in a fight. But ultimately, it comes down to the story and the motivations. And I think in both of those movies, that element is really undercut. I think Batman versus Superman jumped the gun by having these characters fight the very first time that they meet so that they don't have the established relationship that's part of the previous mythos, like in Frank Miller's The Dark Knight Returns and the comic books when Batman and Superman fight. There's a whole backstory there that's missing. And I think it can lead to a certain kind of a nihilism because, you know, instead of heroes being united around the positive things that they're supposed to be fighting for, the only thing we can think of to do is to have them fight each other. And where is the heroism in that? Who are you supposed to admire or look up to in that?
Henry.
That's yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say thanks for your call, Henry, because I want to try to get one more caller in before we have to go, okay?
Okay, yeah, no problem.
A call anytime. It was a pleasure speaking with you. Let's go to Tony in Iowa. Tony, you're going to have to state your question kind of quick so that Deacon can give you a full answer.
Will do. Just wanted to talk about a really phenomenal movie, of course, The Exorcist. I look up to the movie. I think it was very well made. It portrays the priesthood in such a heroic light. However, it's difficult for me to go back and watch it because it is just so... It's almost a little too good, you know what I mean? And I wonder, have you ever struggled with that? Is that a movie that you ever go back and rewatch? Is that one that you own? I own it, but I tend to just keep it on the shelf, and I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I also own it, and it's been on my shelf for a long time. It's been a very long time since I've watched it. It's certainly a hugely important film in American cinema. It's really the kind of pivotal film between old school Hollywood piety, the Hollywood piety of the golden age, and the later exorcism themed films where the church is really touted as having the goods against the powers of darkness. I think it really comes from a place of spiritual struggle from the novelist and the screenwriter, not so much the director. I think it's an important film, and I think it has a lot of respect for the Catholic Church. I think it's still ultimately a somewhat problematic and exploitative film. I can't wholeheartedly endorse it, but I appreciate its importance, and I appreciate the fact that it has pointed a lot of people to the Catholic Church and to the priesthood.
Okay, Tony?
All right. Thank you very much. Oh, and just a quick shout-out to Enemy Mine, amazing science fiction movie from 1985. Not sure how many other listeners think it's amazing, but I do.
Oh, is that the one where they were – oh, we got to go. Go ahead real quick.
Real quick, I just wanted to mention I have an article on exorcism in the movies at Decent Films that discusses this film in its context of other films on this topic.
DecentFilms.com?
DecentFilms.com.
DecentFilms.com. Deacon Stephen Gradonis, thank you so much for another fine hour discussing film. I hope we will make it a more regular thing. It's always insightful and helpful to us. And really, movies are at the heart of our culture in many ways these days. Oh, okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. We are a cinema culture. And even as you know, the theatrical experience is going away, we watch these movies on Blu-ray, DVD, and streaming. They'll be with us forever.
And despite the somewhat unsatisfactory review, I'm probably going to have to see Solo. Thank you, Deacon Gradonis, again. We really appreciate it. Coming up next, the great big giant, as yet unnamed, Catholic Answers game show with our super secret celebrity guest.